Chapter 2. The Word of a Goddess. It would be a visit, nothing more, Driest answered Catti Bree's scowl. His wife hadn't been happy with the suggestion that he take Brienne to the east, to Damara in the Monastery of the Yellow Rose, to meet Grandmaster Cain. I owe them the full recounting of Brother Afrafrenfir. She only started walking a season ago, and now you want her to learn how to kick through a board? Catti Bree countered. Driz started to reply, but just chuckled instead and shook his head. Come with us, he simply suggested again. This isn't just a visit, Driz. I know what you want, she said. You want her to go there and train there and learn there. Eventually, Driz admitted. I cannot tell you how much those months with Grandmaster Cain have done for me and the way I see the world around me. And after my transcendence is what the monks call it, but I find that word insufficient. I'm not concerned about what words you use to describe that experience. Fair enough. After my departures from this world, this life and existence, I have come to see so much more. How can I not wish to share that with my child? The same way that I wish to share with Brienne my love of Mialiki? Catti Bree asked rather sharply, which brought a wince from Drizzt. He knew the stubbornness behind her refusal here, for she and Drizzt had been quite at odds regarding the goddess Mialiki since Drizzt's companions had returned from the Enchanted Forest years ago. The argument had started over a discussion that seemed more theoretical than of material or practical importance, a dispute regarding the nature of orcs and goblins and the like. Drizzt had come to believe that these goblinkin races were not evil by nature, as the drow were not, but were bent to such acts and practices by the influence of powerful, godlike forces, as were so many of the races of Toril. But no, Mialiki had denied such a theory to Catti Bree. His wife knew that drow were not evil creatures by nature, of course. She had married Drizzt, after all, and he knew with confidence that she loved him with all of her heart and soul. So how could she hold such a prejudice? No, that idea was impossible. But goblinkin were different, she had insisted, both in her opinion and according to the edicts of her goddess. Mialiki had told the priestess, indeed a chosen priestess, that goblinkin were evil incarnate, brought to the world to cause misery, nothing more. Yes, she had conceded, Drizzt had met an exception once long ago in a small town called Pengallen. But while Catti Bree hadn't doubted his memory or his sincerity, she had relayed that she thought his judgment in that particular situation regarding a goblin named Nojime to be skewed. He hadn't seen the full picture, perhaps, she had gently offered. Driz wasn't sure of his convictions on this matter, but what he was certain of was that he would not be guided against his conscience by a supposed goddess, any goddess. Once he too had followed Mialiki, but he had always thought of her, of all the gods, as manifestations of that which was in the hearts of their respective followers. They were just names given to conscience, or, if more, no matter, for following them meant following that which you believe to be true, not the words relayed. Or in this case, not even the words directly conveyed. This debate hadn't come up much over the last few years, but the implications had clearly persisted and resurfaced now that they had a child to raise, with all the questions such a daunting task entailed. They were to guide the life of another sentient, independent, growing being. They were to shape Brienne's earliest understanding of the world, and such influence, both Drizzt and Catti Bree understood, could be a guiding beacon or a stifling anchor to Brienne's journey. Drizzt started to respond several times, but faltered with each attempt. He had to take care with his words here, for he was speaking to the very soul of himself and of Catti Bree. They didn't have to align on every issue, of course, but this was a fundamental belief that went even beyond the nature of goblinkin and to the very concept of God and creation and the purpose of life itself. She will know of the goddess, Catti Bree said. I know. Can you say with all of your heart that you feel equally strongly that you will know Grandmaster Cain and the Order of St. Solars? I am not of the Order of St. Solars, Drizzt reminded her. Aren't you, though? You ably performed their most spiritual and accomplished act in leaving the material plane of your own volition. The philosophy of Grandmaster Kane is one of self-discovery through meditation and perfection of the body through repetition. This is the teaching of the man they call Saint Solers, yes? Saint, Catty Bree echoed, making clear the implication. Philosopher warrior, Drizzt corrected. These teachings are showing me a way in the manner of Mele Magther, and before it, the training of my father, Zacnaphane. Yet I do not deify him. You do not deify anyone or anything anymore, it would seem. Drizzt let that sink in for several long breaths. Am I any different in that regard than when I left Menzo Berenzon? Did you not lead me to Mieliki? Drizzt had to pause on that. I told you what was in my heart, and the name I had given it was Mieliki. Because she was the embodiment of your ethical beliefs, Catty Bree replied. Yes, but she is a living goddess, and so when she speaks in communion, are not those declarations commandments you must follow? No. It actually surprised Drizzt how quickly the answer left his mouth and the conviction behind the response. I don't know that I can call her a goddess, or the divine beings of Toril gods at all, he said, speaking as much to clarify the thoughts in his own mind as an explanation to Catty Bree. Perhaps they are no more than caretakers of destinations that might best fit their followers. Perhaps they are illusions or self-deceptions because of our fears of what is next, if anything. You have died in return, Catty Bree reminded him. Am I deluded in that? Did I? Or did I find some magic of the mind that transcended my physical form and would thus leave me in a temporary state as I dissipated into nothingness? Or everythingness? That, my love, is my hope, Drizzt admitted with a smile. You said that you felt the joy of true peace, yet still you doubt. Perhaps that was my own deception to ease the transition. Catty Bree's chuckle wasn't meant to mock him, but it did. My doubting husband. It is real, there is more, I have seen it. I have lived it in Eruladoon, though that was merely a place of holding. But I was there with Wulfgar, Brunner, and Regis after we had died, and Zacnaphane lost for scores of years and now is returned. I know, Drizzt said. There remain so many things beyond my ability to truly understand. That's why it is called faith. Drizzt conceded the point with a shrug. Yet you doubt the word of Mieliki, Catty Bree said. She has told me the nature of goblinkin, and that nature is one of evil. I hold true to that which is in my heart, Drizzt countered. I hold faith that my conscience guides me. You put yourself above Mieliki. Catty Bree's voice took on a sharper edge, but she softened it immediately, Drizzt noted, as weary of this recurring argument as he. And so you would not wish me to introduce our daughter to Mieliki? She asked at length. Of course I would. If you do not, then I would. I would give her the whole world to see and devour, so she may pick those morsels that are within her heart. And if she chose Mieliki to become a priestess, above your training with Grandmaster Kane? Why are they exclusionary? After a long sigh, Catty Bree admitted, they probably aren't, though the latter has led you further from the former. Perhaps you alone should take Brienne to the Monastery of the Yellow Rose and hear the lessons of Grandmaster Kane, Drizzt offered with a smirk. You were once formidable with the blade, and deadly with the bow, I recall. Deadlier now, his wife replied, narrowing her eyes and turning them just enough to the side to emphasize the quiet, light-hearted threat. Drizzt leaped over to her and wrapped her in a hug, kissing her cheek, then whispering in her ear, I find that quite alluring. It is a dance, after all, Catty Bree whispered back, turning within his grasp to kiss him fully. Want again? Came a tiny voice from the door. Perhaps we should have Camoriel take her to the Illithids, Drizzt said through his helpless smile, for the child can read minds. I'm not so sure reading your mind is that difficult at this point, Catty Bree teased, swaying against him just a bit. Call the panther. Let her play with her again for a while. While we finish our discussion? Caddy Bree widened a smile and chuckled, but her expression changed suddenly into a feigned stern look. "Don't ruin it," she warned. "You seem a bit disheveled today," Jarlaxle slyly remarked, and he tried too obviously to hide his grin, telling Caddy Bree that she was blushing. "Every day is a trial with a toddler," she said. "Very busy, I imagine. A constant chase, yes." "I do hope you have found some time for yourself," the mercenary quipped. "That is always important." "Yes, Jarlaxle. I've examined your fiery whip," an exasperated Caddy Bree finally said, in an attempt to end this one's endless games of cryptic remarks and even double entendre. Yes, it was obvious that she had just come from Drizzt's bed, she knew. And so she would expect nothing less from this cavalier drow, so dedicated to the pleasures of life. She moved across the dais of the small chapel she had consecrated not far from the suite she, Drizzt, and Brienne shared in Gauntlegrim, and reached behind a bench to produce the marvelous whip Jarlaxle had given her. "Did your ring offer any insights?" Jarlaxle asked. "Not really. It does cut into the plane of fire, yes. The magic is true, but we already knew that." "Do you understand the Dwyamer? Is it a form of extraplanar gate spell, perhaps?" Caddy Bree shrugged. "I expect there is something of that sort, yes. But there is nothing I can detect or understand. This is an old weapon, of that I am sure, and I doubt it was created by human or elven or dwarven hands." "Or even on this plane?" "Probably. More likely it was fashioned in the Abyss or the Nine Hells, and by a being of greater magical knowledge than I." "You speak of the lower planes. Did you sense any malevolence within the whip?" "No, it is just a bullwhip with a marvelous magical edge that can cut lines into the plane of fire." Jarlaxle blew a long sigh. "What? Will it work, I wonder? Or will I be destroying a most marvelous tool?" "I do not know." "But you have used the Great Forge in such a way before," the mercenary said, "with Drizzt's broken scimitar and Vidrinath. You combine the powers of the two, and again, with Brunner's shield and the magical web shield called Orbcress." "Combined, perhaps, but it was not strictly additive. Some powers remained in the products of the magical items, some disappeared. In both cases, however, the returned item was greater than either of the two you put to the flames of the Great Forge." Caddy Bree nodded. "The combination of Vidrinath and Twinkle is formidable, and the only drawback to Brunner's shield is that he spends more time conjuring mugs of ale and lager and mead for his forces than he does in planning the next fight." That brought a smile to Jarlaxle's face. "Why, then, do you hesitate now regarding my proposition?" he asked. "They're my toys, and so the risk is all mine. Do I not have your trust?" "Of course you do," the woman replied. "It is just that when I forged Drizzt's scimitar and King Brunner's shield, it was almost as if it was not me doing it. I was more the conduit for powers I do not understand." "Your goddess?" "Maybe. Or more likely it involves Megara, the primordial who powers all the forges of Gauntlegrim. It is a creature of the plane of fire, a veritable god of that plane, trapped here in this place. And you ask me to feed into its flames." "Ah, the whip," Jarlaxle said, catching on. "You fear that it will somehow—" "Would you throw a bag of holding into your portable hole?" Caddy Bree interrupted. "Of course not, or at least I would not have before." "What?" "It does not matter," Jarlaxle replied. He had paid Grand Bayenry a small fortune to shift the magic of his portable hole so that it could accept such other extra-dimensional pockets without the terrible side effect. But she didn't need to know that now. "Why wouldn't you?" Caddy Bree pressed. "Because it would tear a rift into the astral plane and suck me in and throw me free, untethered." "But this is different," he insisted. "Neither the primordial nor the whip is an extra-dimensional pocket." "But the potential for some unforeseen catastrophe remains," Caddy Bree replied. and not just one for me or those around me. If I give the primordial a passage out of this place, the magic of Gontalgrim goes with it." Jarl Axel paused and rubbed his chin, staring at the woman carefully, not dismissing a word of her warning. "Do you truly believe that placing the whip within the great forge will prove disastrous?" he asked with disappointment thick in his voice. Caddybri recognized the tone and the look on his face. Jarl Axel had been planning this for a long time, and not for any gain for himself. Or not too much. It was Jarl Axel, after all. "I do not expect that it will, but neither do I know what the primordial flames will do. I knew what I wanted when I forged Twinkle and Vidranath, but the weapon I got wasn't quite that. The same was true regarding Brunner's shield. I can know the various three armors of an item, but how they combine is beyond me."
"You have an idea, though."
"I do.
Will you try?
Do you have the other item?"
"Not yet, and getting it will be no easy task, nor a cheap one. But I will get it, and soon, and when I do, if you will help me in this, if you will join it with this whip through the power of the great forge, I promise you a treasure you will think worth the effort."
"So you said. I am the daughter of King Brunner, the wife of Driz Doerden, a friend to the Ivy Mansion, and the chosen of Mieliki. What might Jarl Axel offer that I do not already have?"
"Adventure," he whispered. And Caddybri was sure that her blue eyes were twinkling despite her desire to remain aloof. "One whose completion you will find most worth your time," Jarl Axel added. "I know you well, good lady. I know your heart. You will be glad for the reward."
"If it is so worthy an adventure, then why must I perform a trick for you to undertake it?"
Jarl Axel laughed aloud. "This is why I am so endeared to you," he said. And he pulled his enormous wide-brimmed hat off his bald head and swept a low bow.
"You didn't answer my question."
"Because it is all connected," Jarl Axel replied. "The forging, the adventure, the gifts to all involved. I will need this whip or the result of your efforts to better ensure the success of the journey that awaits me, that awaits us."
Caddybri paused a moment to consider that, and to consider again why and for whom Jarl Axel had asked her to consider utilizing the great forge of Gontalgrim. "So the whip and this other item combined for Zacnaphane, an adventure for me. And what for Jarl Axel?" she asked. "Relief from the tedium of governing and counting pieces of gold, and the security of strengthening the bonds with friends I hold dear."
"And?"
"Nothing more," he said. But Caddybri didn't believe him, and her expression showed that quite clearly.
What we seek may turn the tide of Menzo Baranzon's swirling waters," the rogue explained. "Even if not, it is an adventure, a quest, worth undertaking. I am more than confident that you will agree with that when the time comes for us to begin."
"After the forging," she replied. "How soon after?"
"There are other things in motion," Jarl Axel answered.
"Aren't there always? With you, I mean."
"Why, yes, lady, that's why I win.
But this time, it is why we all win."
"I hope so," Jarl Axel answered, his voice suddenly sober and full of weight. "I have grumped hard at his study, trying to find us the proper starting point. By the time I can return with the other item for the forge, and you can finish your work here, I expect he will be finished, and we can truly begin."
"Your words always seem to bring more questions than answers."
"Because, my dear Caddybri, the world is so full of wonderful puzzles."
"I will see what I can further learn," she said, surrendering with a sigh. "If I determine that the risk is small enough, I will do this forging for you, but I'll not be responsible if the result is not to your liking."
"I live for such games of chance," he said. "And I live to make sure that I have done all that I can to ensure that I have placed the bet correctly."
That, too, Caddybri knew not to doubt.